This is Jay Sekulow. More analysis on the Netanyahu speech.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
On the core issue, which is how do we prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon, which would make it far more dangerous and would give it scope for even greater action in the region, the Prime Minister didn't offer any viable alternatives.
Before lifting those restrictions, the world should demand that Iran do three things. First, stop its aggression against its neighbors in the Middle East. Second, stop supporting terrorism around the world. And third, stop threatening to annihilate my country, Israel, the one and only Jewish state.
So we're staying focused on the central issue here. How do we prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon? And Prime Minister Netanyahu has not offered any kind of viable alternative that would achieve the same verifiable mechanism to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon.
My friends, for over a year, we've been told that no deal is better than a bad deal. Well, this is a bad deal. It's a very bad deal. We're better off without it. Now we're being told that the only alternative to this bad deal is war. That's just not true. The alternative to this bad deal is a much better deal. The battle between Iran and ISIS doesn't turn Iran into a friend of America. Iran and ISIS are competing for the crown of militant Islam. One calls itself the Islamic Republic, the other calls itself the Islamic State. Both want to impose a militant Islamic empire, first on the region and then on the entire world. They just disagree among themselves who will be the ruler of that empire.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Welcome to the broadcast, everyone. We'll be taking your calls in a moment, but let me tell you something. The fallout that has existed now between the speech from Benjamin Netanyahu that just took place a couple of days ago at a joint meeting of the United States House and Senate, coupled with the president's 11-minute response, let me say that again, 11-minute response, shows you the tension within the relationship between the president of the United States and the state of Israel. Now, I intentionally just said the president of the United States and the state of Israel because the American people overwhelmingly are in support of maintaining a strong relationship with the Jewish state of Israel. There's no doubt about that. You look at all the surveys. There are some, sure, on the hard left that take this anti-Israel view. But the reality is most of the people that you talk to take a pro-Israel view. And look, I mean, as someone that has represented Israel's interests before international tribunals, I understand the importance of the Jewish state. But for the president to have the Democrats come out after that speech, which I said, by the way, on yesterday's broadcast, one of the best speeches I've ever heard, to come out after that and do basically a Democratic rebuttal to that speech was absurd. I would say it's offensive. And I think we have to recognize very quickly what's at play here. And that is the politics of President Obama narrative as it relates to the Middle East. That's a theme we've talked about a lot on this broadcast. This idea that the president was going to change relationships in the Muslim world for the better, and we'd all have a peaceful existence. Well, that is certainly not the reality between ISIS and Iran and everything in between. We got a lot of calls coming in. I'm going to come into those calls right after the break, folks. We're sending a huge thank you to Prime Minister Netanyahu in the form of a petition. And we want tens of thousands of signatures on this. We're going to deliver it to him. We have an office in Jerusalem. That office will deliver these to the Prime Minister. Your name can be on a petition to the Prime Minister of the State of Israel. Go to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. You can sign the petition there or 1-877-989-2255. So it's ACLJ.org. It's ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255 to sign on to that petition. Tens of thousands already have. Remember our book, Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore. Number one on the New York Times bestsellers list. Still available. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever books are sold. We'll be back in just a moment.
No, I can't stand this evil anymore. Israel is our most important and trusted ally in the Middle East, but the Obama administration is doing everything it can to undermine that relationship. The Obama administration repeatedly has attacked Israel for defending itself in a world where Israel and the Jewish people are targeted for elimination. Now the administration is undermining Israel's security in nuclear negotiations with Iran. The Obama administration was sharply critical of Prime Minister Netanyahu's address to Congress this week, an address that underscored the real dangers facing Israel by a nuclear Iran. This is not the way to treat our longtime ally and partner in fighting terrorism. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice and send a message to the President and Congress. Stand with Israel and stop bullying our most vital ally. Add your name to our petition right now. Call 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org. The brutality of ISIS is unspeakable. The strategy of ISIS, the Islamic State, is clear. Beheadings, crucifixions, mass executions, and a wave of anti-Christian abuse that's been called, quote, the worst religious persecution since the Holocaust. In a new book, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team examine the rise of ISIS and the very real and present danger it poses to the world, including right here in the United States. It's called Rise of ISIS, a must-read as America faces new and dangerous threats. Help us sound the alarm. We must get the nation's attention, the government's attention. Help us spread the word. Buy the book, read it, and tell your friends. When you buy the book, you'll also receive a powerful new song, Where I Stand by the Jay Sekulow Band. Order Rise of ISIS online at riseofisis.com. Also available in bookstores everywhere.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're going to go right to the phones. We're talking, of course, about the speech earlier this week between the Prime Minister of Israel and the United States House and Senate, and then I would call it the reply, the rebuttal of President Obama, which is unbelievable. The Democrats had their own rebuttal as well, but we've got a lot of calls coming in. Again, if you want to talk to us on air, it's 1-800-684-3110. Jordan, let's take another phone call.
Right to the phones we go, and folks who want to talk to us, 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Donna in Mississippi on line two. Donna, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Donna. Welcome to the broadcast. You're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The speech that I watched yesterday was so... I haven't heard speech like that in a long time. Wisdom, knowledge, and brought to the point. My question to you is, or I would challenge anybody in the United States whose representatives were not there to bombard their phone.
I think you're right about that. And we've called out the ones, some of the leaders that did not show up. But most Democrats did come, by the way. There was what was the final number, Will? Was it 56 that did not? I still think that's despicable. It's the leader of a Democratic ally in the Middle East, for goodness sake. You'd think they'd have the smarts to show up. But I thought what happened here was symptomatic of the president's policy, Jordan, actually failing. I think that's what really happened here. The policy failed. And that was his attempt to pressure Democrats not to come. So the policy ended up failing.
That's right. We talked about this, but there's the two different approaches here. And the one was that the White House tried to undermine this. And I don't think that's ever a good move in the United States of America, because the American people, as Prime Minister Netanyahu said, support Israel. They do stand with Israel. And they want to hear from Israel's leader on an issue that's so important to all of us. And so that's not going to work. But then second, even if they don't like this idea, the truth is this is part of diplomacy and part of dealing with the world and dealing with allies. Allies have friends in the government that are more long-term even than the President of the United States, members of Congress and those in Washington, D.C., who have been around some before the Obama administration and will be around after, that they're going to work with it when it comes to such important deals. As something is brand new to all of us is the idea that we would have a deal with Iran.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. All right, we're going to go right back to our phones at 1-800-684-3110. Jordan, let's take another caller.
Steve in Washington State on line five. Steve, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Steve.
I wanted to point out something I heard on the show.
Yep.
Your show's great. You said about that. They said a quote from Obama: "If they cheat, okay. If the Iranians cheat, that kind of sets up a message that they haven't cheated before." Netanyahu has the complete opposite message for us. They have cheated.
Let me actually play the I think this is important. I think you bring up a good point. I want you to finish your comments, Steve, but let me play the bite. It's number 11. Take a listen.
I think it's important for us to stay focused on the problem at hand. And the specific problem that is being debated right now is not whether we trust the Iranian regime or not. We don't trust them. It's not whether Iran engages in destabilizing activities. Everybody agrees with that. The central question is, how can we stop them from getting a nuclear weapon? And what we know is that if we're able to get a deal, not only do we cut off all the various pathways for Iran getting a nuclear weapon, but we also know that we'll have a verification mechanism and an inspection mechanism where if they cheat and if they engage in a covert program, we are far more likely to see it in time to do something about it.
So your point is, Steve, and I want you to finish here. The president acknowledges that, hey, we're not saying we can trust them. We're not saying they're not going to engage in destabilizing. By the way, destabilizing procedures or events in the Middle East could cause. That's what wars are existing right now in the Middle East, because of destabilizing actions by the Iranian regime. But go ahead, Steve, with the rest of your comment.
Okay, well, this is what I also love about your guys' show, is that I know what to do now. I'm going to call my rep, who didn't show up, as a Democrat, to listen to Netanyahu. He didn't show up to listen to Netanyahu, but they're going to the table to listen to the Iranians. And then I'm going to double down and let Netanyahu know on your petition that I was listening. Maybe my rep wasn't listening, maybe my president was listening, but I, as American, am listening.
Great, great point, Steve. I really appreciate that. Let me play for you while you're here. Let me play for you, because Benjamin Netanyahu said this about the lack of the international inspectors, what's happened in the past, as you called it, the cheating, the lying. Listen to this one.
Iran, too, has defied international inspectors. It's done that on at least three separate occasions, 2005, 2006, 2010. Now, I know this is not going to come as a shock to any of you, but Iran not only defies inspectors, it also plays a pretty good game of hide and cheat with them.
Yeah, well, there you have it. So how could it be any clearer than I thought, Steve? That was a great point and a great call. Jordan, as you look at the situation right now, what is now, 24, 48, 72 hours after the speech, and people are doing the final analysis here, what do you think the final impact is?
Congress is re-engaged on the issue. So that's going to be very important long term here, is that Congress is now looking at what role they can play in preventing a bad deal. What Prime Minister Netanyahu was talking about. So funding mechanisms, talking about this. And there is still bipartisan support for Israel in Congress, just because some of the Democrats didn't show up. There's still overwhelming support for Israel. And so putting that support to good use.
All right, we're taking more calls at 800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Let's take Kristen's call, Jordan, from Florida. It's a very interesting one, and I want to get ready because the Prime Minister in his speech days ago made the statement about the Book of Esther, or actually talked about Queen Esther. But go ahead, Kristen, with your call.
Hey, Jay. Thanks for taking my call. Frequently throughout the Bible, we read to pray for the peace of Israel, Psalm 122, and so forth, Old and New Testament.
Right.
My question for you is, do you see this particular incident with the Prime Minister and also with President Obama and putting our trust in Iran, which is our past enemy,
right?
I think, in my opinion, maybe still would be.
Listen, here's what he said. I mean, I thought when the Prime Minister said this was absolutely correct. He used, you're talking about a biblical reference, he used references from Scripture in two different occasions. He talked about Moses. We'll talk about that later in the broadcast. But he also brought up Queen Esther, the Jewish holiday of Purim that just took place. And this is what's interesting. This is coming from the Prime Minister of Israel speaking to a joint session of the House and Senate, a joint meeting. Listen to what he said, number 16.
Tomorrow night, on the Jewish holiday of Purim, we'll read the Book of Esther. We'll read of a powerful Persian viceroy named Haman, who plotted to destroy the Jewish people some 2,500 years ago. But a courageous Jewish woman, Queen Esther, exposed the plot and gained for the Jewish people the right to defend themselves against their enemies. The plot was foiled. Our people were saved.
So, Kristen, there's a biblical reference, if that's what you were looking at. And let me do the follow-up here, because I think this is important. Because the prime minister drew the analysis that the Persian Empire tried this once before through Haman, and yet they're trying it again in our own times, as if the scripture is alive today, and of course it is, but that we're witnessing it today. Listen to number 17.
Today, the Jewish people face another attempt by yet another Persian potentate to destroy us. Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, spews the oldest hatred of anti-Semitism with the newest technology. He tweets that Israel must be annihilated. You know, in Iran, there isn't exactly free internet. But he tweets in English that Israel must be destroyed.
And Jordan, we don't have as a precondition to any of these discussions. When the president even says, oh, no, they can't be trusted, we have no preconditions to any of this.
No, that's right. And we don't have the Americans released either. So for our own interest, separate from Israel's, just having the Americans who are being illegally imprisoned in Iran, whether it's Saeed Abedini, the Washington Post reporter, Amir Hekmati, who is visiting his grandmother,
right,
or the missing American, why are those not all handled before we're getting down to the really a huge issue of what kind of nuclear program Iran can or can't have that's going to be accepted by the superpowers of the world?
You're absolutely correct. Let's take one more call before the break. Who do we have next?
Derek in Pennsylvania on line one. Derek, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Derek. You're on the air.
Hi. My question is, if the nuclear talks break down between the U.S. and Iran and the P5, do you think that Obama will really attack the Iranians? I don't believe it. I don't think the Iranians are afraid of him attacking them either.
I think you're absolutely correct. I don't think he would do it. I don't think that he has the will to do it. We have the capability of doing it, but I don't think the president has the will to do it. And I think at the end of the day, Derek, the truth is that the reason the Iranians are not afraid is because they're not afraid. Because our refusal to put forward force when necessary to protect the vital interests of the United States and our allies in the region. That's going to do it for this segment of the broadcast, folks. Thanks for calling. By the way, sign that petition supporting. This is important. We need to support Israel, and we're going to deliver this to the prime minister himself, and your name can be on it. ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. That's ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255 to sign that petition of support for Israel and the Jewish people. And also remember our book, Rise of ISIS, Threat We Can't Ignore, available in bookstores everywhere.
The brutality of ISIS is unspeakable. The strategy of ISIS, the Islamic State, is clear. Beheadings, crucifixions, mass executions, and a wave of anti-Christian abuse that's been called, quote, the worst religious persecution since the Holocaust. In a new book, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team examine the rise of ISIS and the very real and present danger it poses to the world, including right here in the United States. It's called Rise of ISIS, a must-read as America faces new and dangerous threats. Help us sound the alarm. We must get the nation's attention, the government's attention. Help us spread the word. Buy the book, read it, and tell your friends. When you buy the book, you'll also receive a powerful new song, Where I Stand by the Jay Sekulow Band. Order Rise of ISIS online at riseofisis.com. Also available in bookstores everywhere. Israel is our most important and trusted ally in the Middle East, but the Obama administration is doing everything it can to undermine that relationship. The Obama administration repeatedly has attacked Israel for defending itself in a world where Israel and the Jewish people are targeted for elimination. Now the administration is undermining Israel's security in nuclear negotiations with Iran. The Obama administration was sharply critical of Prime Minister Netanyahu's address to Congress this week, an address that underscored the real dangers facing Israel by a nuclear Iran. This is not the way to treat our longtime ally and partner in fighting terrorism. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice and send a message to the President and Congress. Stand with Israel and stop bullying our most vital ally. Add your name to our petition right now. Call 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. Joining me in the studio is Chris Mitchell, a good friend of ours. He is the Middle East Bureau Chief for CBN News. He's got a great new book out dealing with the Middle East. We had a chance to talk about a lot of issues, including the jihadi threat that's now going on, something that Benjamin Netanyahu talked about.
Chris Mitchell is the Bureau Chief for CBN News of the Bureau in Jerusalem. He's a dear friend and someone that's been covering what's going on not only with ISIS but in the greater Middle East for over two decades. He's our guest. We want to talk about some issues that are of serious concern. Chris has a brand new book out called Destination Jerusalem, ISIS, Convert or Die, Christian Persecution, and Preparing for the Days Ahead, Destination Jerusalem. So let's talk about this for a moment. I, as you know, wrote a book on ISIS as well.
That's right.
I did the combination of ISIS and Hamas because I look at ISIS coming from the east, moving towards Jerusalem. I look at Hamas coming from the west, moving towards Jerusalem. You could certainly look at Hezbollah in the south, and you got this, you know, basically confluence of activity. But you have been in the field, Chris. And we've got video that people are watching of this right now, of you reporting in the field. And we're going to show some of those reports later in this documentary. Give us your take right now on the status for Christians in Syria and Iraq. You've been there. What's it like?
Well, right now it's awful for them. I mean, they were given four choices, Jay. They were given, they could either leave the homes they had been in for maybe generations or years. Then they were given the choice they could stay and they could pay the jizya tax, the Islamic tax for infidels, which was usually something they couldn't afford. Then they could convert, you know, by saying the Shahada, the Islamic creed, in front of two witnesses, or they could die by the sword. So this is the four choices that Christians were given. So it's right now, most of them, I mean, tens of thousands of them have fled ISIS and now are living in refugee camps. They're living in churches or schools in Erbil and in different areas.
You dedicated the portion of the book, or at least talked about Canon Andrew White. We had Canon White. He's in this documentary. He's been a dear friend of ours. We supported his work. He's had to move from Iraq to Jordan because of the threats on his life, and he's basically relocated a lot of these young kids to be educated in Jordan. What is the day-to-day situation like for Christians right now that are dealing with this unbelievable amount of terror? Jihadist armies is what it really is. What's it like for them?
Well, they're living in fear. I mean, just a couple of days ago, maybe 200 Christians were abducted. Yeah. Some of the men were taken
220 is the number today.
Abducted to an undisclosed location for the men. Who knows what their fate's going to be? The women perhaps sold into sex slavery. So living under the shadow of terror that we haven't seen in generations or centuries.
Do you think this is worse than Al-Qaeda?
Oh, yes, very much so. I think it's morphed into something or metastasized into something we haven't seen in a long, long time, this kind of barbarism that that the world is witnessing right now.
When you look at, you've covered you've been in the conflicts in when it's with Hamas, when you look at ISIS, we drew a parallel that there, a lot of the goals were the same. That's the destruction of Israel. Of course, ISIS focused more on the establishment of the caliphate. You put this in the book. In your book, you talk about, you know, the establishment of the caliphate. How significant of an event, both politically and theologically, is this for the jihadist world?
It's a turning point, I think, in history. The last caliphate was in 1924, was abolished by then President Ataturk in Turkey, and I think this has been the dream ever since that was abolished by Muslims around the world, that one day the caliphate would be reestablished, which is basically this Islamic empire ruled under Islamic Sharia law. This is something they had dreamed about, and now their dream has come true. And I think it's called ripples throughout the Islamic world, where whether it's in Libya or the Sinai Peninsula, as far away as the Philippines, it's sort of fueled the imagination of many Muslims and now are pledging allegiance to ISIS.
What about this concern that we're seeing, and I think it's a sociological concern as much as anything else, where you've got people from the West, Great Britain, France, the United States, we had three arrested yesterday, but you've had British citizens. There are more Muslims serving in ISIS's army than serve Her Majesty's forces in Great Britain. What's with this attraction of young people from around the world to this barbarism?
Well, it's a spiritual phenomenon, it seems, fueled by the internet, by social media. And I think there's two things going on, Jay, right now. One thing you mentioned, these Westerners, whether it's in Great Britain, America, or Europe, attracted to this kind of ideology and want to either make their way there or maybe commit lone wolf attacks in London or wherever, maybe even the Mall of America, like some have been encouraged to do. The other thing I think that's going on, Jay, within ISIS itself, there's maybe 8 to 12 million people, and they're indoctrinating a new generation of young jihadis, 8, 10, 12-year-old, that are pledging their allegiance to al-Baghdadi, to the caliph, and to the caliphate. And I think we're going to be dealing with this for years to come.
Well, I said we could be engaged in the thousand-year war here. I mean, this has that kind of feel. Yeah. It's intergenerational. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind that the United States could lead a real military coalition and crush ISIS, which is, I think, the only way you can deal with them.
Right.
You can't contain them. They have to be crushed. We've got the military capacity to do it. The question, of course, politically is, do we have the will? And apparently, with the authorization for use of military force the president put forward, we don't. You're holding in your hand something I want to get to here. This is a Bible.
That's right, New Testament.
Where did this come from?
Well, when we ISIS took over Mosul and which is ancient Nineveh, you know, thousands of Christians they fled, and we interviewed a number of them, and one of them was this man who gave me this New Testament. His name was Fadi, and he said that he had actually been snitched on by his neighbors, who told ISIS he was a Christian. They searched his house and they found two New Testaments. This one, which is camouflage, given to him by a U.S. service member. The other one was a New Testament, Psalms and Proverbs, that had an American flag on the inside. So they accused Fadi of being either a missionary or a spy. And miraculously, he escaped. And as we did the interview with him, and we're doing the interview now here with showing our faces, we had to do his interview with just showing his profile so he wasn't going to be identified, because he's on an ISIS hit list. And he said he just broke down during the interview. He sobbed. He felt like his life was over. He has an 8-year-old son. He has a teenage daughter. And now he doesn't know what's going to happen to them. Will they be educated? And during the interview, and he said, Jesus, save me, and also forgive ISIS. And he was just weeping as he said that. So after the interview, he gave me this. And at the time, I thought I shouldn't accept it. It's such a personal and special memento. And yet I thought I shouldn't refuse it. And so he gave me this. And I keep it as a reminder of the tens of thousands of Christians right now that have suffered through ISIS and throughout the Middle East. And that's something you're doing, Jay, you know, through your different programs, your radio show, raising awareness about the persecuted brothers and sisters in the Middle East. And that's why I wrote Destination Jerusalem, in large part, to help inform the West, the United States, Europe, others around the world that need to know who our suffering brothers and sisters are. And the second thing I had, Jay, here was a piece of candy. And after we interviewed Fadi, we went over to a Catholic churchyard. Dozens of families there. It was in the middle of the summer, maybe 100 degrees or more. And most people had lost everything. And after our interviews, one lady came up to me, and she gave me a piece of candy. And the piece of candy was maybe the last thing she could do to show some sign of hospitality. And so I just keep both of these as a reminder of what our brothers and sisters are going through right now.
That's going to do it for this half hour of the broadcast. Remember, we are on SiriusXM for the full hour. If you're not getting the full hour and you have SiriusXM, just go right over to SiriusXM. If not, ACLJ.org. We're streaming it live there. Let me encourage you to join with thousands of others that are signing this petition in support of the Jewish state, of Israel, and of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The president didn't show his support, but you can. And we are going to deliver this to the Prime Minister. Our office in Jerusalem is going to deliver this to the Prime Minister. So here's what we need to do. Go to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Or call us at 1-877-989-2255. That's ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. Don't forget, like us on Facebook. I've got Facebook. Jordan has Facebook. The American Center for Law and Justice has Facebook. Even the Jay Sekulow Band has Facebook. So do that. Also follow us on Twitter. We'll be back with more in just a moment. I can't stand to see this evil anymore. And while the world is sleeping, welcome them for...
The Obama administration was sharply critical of Prime Minister Netanyahu's address to Congress this week. This is not the way to treat our longtime ally and partner in fighting terrorism. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice and send a message to the President and Congress. Stand with Israel and stop bullying our most vital ally. Add your name to our petition right now. Call 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. Benjamin Netanyahu, in his speech, talked about the persecution that's going on against Christians and others in the Middle East. Take a listen.
As Christians in the Middle East are beheaded and their ancient communities are decimated, Israel's Christian community is growing and thriving, the only one such community in the Middle East.
Now, joining me now is someone that knows this firsthand, and that is the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White.
Canon White, let me start with something that we've talked a lot over the years on a lot of issues, but I want to get to something.
And we're still here.
And we're still here. Yeah. And you're still here, which is miraculous, especially with what's been going on where you've been ministering in Iraq. Let's go back a step. How did you end up as an anesthesiologist, trained as an anesthesiologist, how did you end up the Vicar of Baghdad? How did you end up in Baghdad?
Well, I was a gas man. I used to put people to sleep with drugs. Now I can put them to sleep with sermons.
Yeah.
So it started, I suppose, when I was in the grounds of St. Thomas's Hospital in London one day by the River Thames. And my desire in life had been to go to St. Thomas's and study there. And I just stood by the Thames and said, "Thank you, God, for giving me what I've always wanted, to come to the best hospital in the world and study. Thank you for making me a gas man." And then I thought, ah, I better ask God what next. So, what next, Lord? Very dangerous thing to say. And he said, "I want you to go into the church. And the Church of England, the Anglican Church." I said, "But Lord, they're not even all saved." He said, "I want you to go into the Anglican Church." So I fought it. Do you know how long I've
I was going to ask you that question. How long?
Half an hour.
Okay, that's not so bad.
Half an hour, which is a very short time. Most people fight it a lot longer than that. After I lost that battle, I applied to go off to Cambridge and do my theology. I went to Cambridge to the pastor factory or the vicar factory. You know, where you walk in normally and you walk out like that. So I went there and I was there a few years. I did my Christian theology in 2 years. Look, Christian theology was quite boring. So I changed. I did Judaism and rabbinics. And I did my doctorate work on the role of Israel in Christian theology. So I not only stayed in Cambridge, I went off to Israel and went to Yeshiva, an ultra-Orthodox rabbinic place of learning. You know, the guys with the big black coats and the furry hats. So I became a bit of a Hasid.
We've got to take a break here, folks. A couple of things we want you to do. If you want to talk to us on air, it's 800-684-3110. We are very blessed to have Canon Andrew White, the Vicar of Baghdad. We're sending a huge thank you to Prime Minister Netanyahu in the form of a petition. And we want tens of thousands of signatures on this. We're going to deliver it to them. We have an office in Jerusalem. That office will deliver these to the Prime Minister. Your name can be on a petition to the Prime Minister of the State of Israel. Go to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. You can sign the petition there or 1-877-989-2255. So it's ACLJ.org. It's ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255 to sign on to that petition. Tens of thousands already have. Remember our book, Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore. Number one on the New York Times bestsellers list. Still available. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever books are sold. We'll be back in just a moment.
Israel is our most important and trusted ally in the Middle East, but the Obama administration is doing everything it can to undermine that relationship. The Obama administration repeatedly has attacked Israel for defending itself in a world where Israel and the Jewish people are targeted for elimination. Now the administration is undermining Israel's security in nuclear negotiations with Iran. The Obama administration was sharply critical of Prime Minister Netanyahu's address to Congress this week, an address that underscored the real dangers facing Israel by a nuclear Iran. This is not the way to treat our longtime ally and partner in fighting terrorism. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice and send a message to the President and Congress. Stand with Israel and stop bullying our most vital ally. Add your name to our petition right now. Call 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org. The brutality of ISIS is unspeakable. The strategy of ISIS, the Islamic State, is clear. Beheadings, crucifixions, mass executions, and a wave of anti-Christian abuse that's been called, quote, the worst religious persecution since the Holocaust. In a new book, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team examine the rise of ISIS and the very real and present danger it poses to the world, including right here in the United States. It's called Rise of ISIS, a must-read as America faces new and dangerous threats. Help us sound the alarm. We must get the nation's attention, the government's attention. Help us spread the word. Buy the book, read it, and tell your friends. When you buy the book, you'll also receive a powerful new song, Where I Stand by the Jay Sekulow Band. Order Rise of ISIS online at riseofisis.com. Also available in bookstores everywhere.
That song, of course, Where I Stand, you can get it with our book, Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore. And by the way, that version, which is also available wherever you buy your music, is with our good friend Ricky Skaggs. Came into our studios here, our media center, and sat down with our team, our band, and played that song with us. And it's a moving tribute to the persecuted church. We are talking with Canon Andrew White, the vicar of Baghdad.
So there you are, the doctor. Becomes ordained, I guess, within the Anglican Church in England, ends up studying at an Orthodox Jewish Hasidim seminary, and then you end up in Baghdad. How did that get you? I understand how you end up in seminary. I understand how you go to Israel to study. How about Baghdad?
I was vicar first in London. I was part of the group of churches which were attached to Holy Trinity Brompton. So quite wacky.
Yep.
And then I went to Coventry Cathedral and I became director of the International Centre of Reconciliation at Coventry. And I did that for quite a few years, but the work became so big that I really needed a colleague. So I got a co-director, an assistant called Justin Welby. He's now Archbishop of Canterbury, right. And I'm the vicar of Baghdad.
He was your assistant.
Yeah, used to be Justin. Now it's Your Grace. So we love each other.
Yeah. Talk to me about Baghdad. We've discussed this a little bit before over the years.
Yeah,
your ministry there. You felt this calling to go. You're reconciled.
When I was at Coventry, I felt I should go in the days of Saddam.
Yeah.
and I couldn't get in. And the last thing I did was to call my staff together and say, let's pray about it. And the next day, the invitation came from Tariq Aziz, Saddam's deputy.
Right.
I used to go and see Tariq Aziz in a palace. Now I go and see him in prison.
Yeah. When you went to Iraq, what was the state of the church?
When I started at my church in Baghdad, there was nothing. No chairs, just the odd mouse. The only living thing in the church were pigeons. Plastic chairs we brought in. We started our service there. I can never forget the first time we worshipped there was just myself and a few of my colleagues with me. A few of my colleagues who incidentally all came from Virginia Beach. Mm. So they were with me for our first service there. But after the war, things changed. First service, my congregation, I looked around and they were nearly all spooks. They were all the CIA and the British intelligence.
So it was American and British. It was
our
people there.
Yeah, it was all the intel.
Yeah.
All the intel were there. And they became my really good friends.
Yep.
So we worshipped there. And then the church grew. First week, 100 Iraqis. It grew when all the spooks stopped coming.
So when the CIA and
so
the
So when the
MI5
Americans and the Brits stopped because it was getting too dangerous, we opened it to the Iraqis. First week, 100. Second week, 200. Third week, 300. Fourth week, 400. Mm. I thought, this is quite a good growth rate.
Yeah, wow.
So we grew to about 6,500. And I
want everybody to understand that. It went from zero to 6,500 in a period of how long?
In a period of a year and a bit.
Mm. That is some growth.
And we started a clinic. It was quite good with my medical background. So we started a doctor's, a dentist, a pharmacy, a laboratory, everything for healthcare. We started there. And we thought it wouldn't need to run for long because healthcare would improve. I was wrong.
Yeah. Did you serve, by the way, when you were serving the healthcare needs of the community, was it just within the Iraqi Christian community or was it opened up to people that needed care?
95% of our patients are Muslims. Hmm. 5% were our own Christian people.
So this was the church really reaching out to the community at large?
It served everybody. People used to say to me, well, how do you preach to the non-Christians? How do you reach Muslims? I said, I don't. I just love them. We just serve them. And all of them have dreams of Yeshua.
Yep.
We call Jesus Yeshua.
Right.
In Israel, we call him Yeshua.
Right.
But in Aramaic, he is Yeshua.
Right.
So I would say that over 70% of our people have had dreams of Jesus. Mm. And a very large number of our people are actually Muslims, Muslim women, come to worship every week.
The ministry there is going on in the context of a war. What was that like for the Christian members of your church while the armed conflict was going on in Iraq?
Well, you see, while it was going on, it's still going on.
Right.
And
well, it's going on even differently now. We'll get to that in a moment.
But
let's talk about
what eventually happened was a lot of our people started moving back to Nineveh.
Mm.
Nineveh is a traditional homeland of the Christian community. And Nineveh is Christian because once upon a time an evangelist came there, miserable evangelist. He came by submarine.
Mm-hmm.
And 700 years later, another miserable evangelist came.
Yeah.
here in the West, you call him Doubting Thomas.
Right.
We call him Martoma.
Right.
And he saw all these people believed in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he said to them, did you know your Messiah had come? His name is Yeshua. He came in Israel. So he told the people, and they all believed. To this day, until ISIS, the terrorists, turned up, a few months ago, Nineveh was all Christian.
So what was daily life like? Let's pre-ISIS. Even during the conflict, of course, there's real conflict now. It's a whole different ballgame, actually, and we'll talk about ISIS in a moment. But what was the daily, what was the day like for the persecuted Christians in Iraq?
I'll be honest with you. Even though everything was awful, we were so happy. Mm. And the media came on, they were making a film about me, and they said to one of our young people, how is it that all of you are so happy when we are surrounded by bombers and your people are being killed and everything is terrible? And she said, when you've lost everything, Jesus is all you've got left. And so even though we have lost everything, we haven't lost our Lord. So we're happy.
Let's talk about the, during the conflict, the first phase of the conflict. We're still in it. That's obviously about to increase significantly in the next few months. But let's talk about where we were. While we have a lot of mutual friends and a lot of friends of mine that with the Department of Justice were serving in Iraq as well on the legal issues and rebuilding the government. So I got to get reports on how you were doing from them. We of course talked and met in Israel a number of times. But let's talk about the ministry aspect of you've always had a heart for reconciliation. That's been a driving force of who you are. How does that play out, so to speak, in the context of the Middle East? Because you've got, you and I worked on Gilead Shalit's case. I mean, we could talk about so many. You've worked on people that have been kidnapped, ransomed. Tell me how that Ministry of Reconciliation works in the portion of the world, the Middle East, which is right now and has been for 2,000 years or longer, one of the key conflict points in the world. How do you do a Ministry of Reconciliation to factions that are often warring with each other?
A Ministry of Reconciliation in the ministry in the Middle East is simply about love. You love, love, and love. When you have enemies, you bring them together. When you have opposition, the best thing you can do is that invite them to eat with you. When we meet, we eat. And I invited ISIS to come and eat with me. And they said, if we come, we kill you.
Let me encourage you also, pray for Andrew Wright and his staff around the Middle East, the greater Middle East. They're doing an incredible work. Your prayers make a difference. So here's what we need to do. Go to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Or call us at 1-877-989-2255. That's ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. Don't forget, like us on Facebook. I've got Facebook. Jordan has Facebook. The American Center for Law and Justice has Facebook. Even the Jay Sekulow Band has Facebook. So do that. Also follow us on Twitter. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
The brutality of ISIS is unspeakable. The strategy of ISIS, the Islamic State, is clear. Beheadings, crucifixions, mass executions, and a wave of anti-Christian abuse that's been called, quote, the worst religious persecution since the Holocaust. In a new book, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team examine the rise of ISIS and the very real and present danger it poses to the world, including right here in the United States. It's called Rise of ISIS, a must-read as America faces new and dangerous threats. Help us sound the alarm. We must get the nation's attention, the government's attention. Help us spread the word. Buy the book, read it, and tell your friends. When you buy the book, you'll also receive a powerful new song, Where I Stand by the Jay Sekulow Band. Order Rise of ISIS online at riseofisis.com. Also available in bookstores everywhere. Israel is our most important and trusted ally in the Middle East, but the Obama administration is doing everything it can to undermine that relationship. The Obama administration repeatedly has attacked Israel for defending itself in a world where Israel and the Jewish people are targeted for elimination. Now the administration is undermining Israel's security in nuclear negotiations with Iran. The Obama administration was sharply critical of Prime Minister Netanyahu's address to Congress this week, an address that underscored the real dangers facing Israel by a nuclear Iran. This is not the way to treat our longtime ally and partner in fighting terrorism. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice and send a message to the President and Congress. Stand with Israel and stop bullying our most vital ally. Add your name to our petition right now. Call 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Folks, we are talking today about Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's speech to the joint session of Congress this week. Folks, I thought he made a very compelling case about the dire threat that is facing Israel, and really the crux of his speech focused on these two major concessions that it is reported are in the tentative deal with Iran and the United States for their nuclear program. The first one being that Iran can leave their program in place, can leave their centrifuges spinning, but then they have to rely on inspections that are governed by the United Nations. Folks, that has happened before, and I thought the Prime Minister said it well, that he said, on this point, Iran could still get a bomb by violating the deal and by avoiding the inspections, by hiding their program from inspectors. They could get a bomb by violating the deal. And on point two, the second concession, the 10-year timeline, essentially a 10-year expiration for this deal. The Prime Minister said it very clearly, that said Iran doesn't even have to violate the deal to get a nuclear bomb. With this 10-year timeline, they can get a bomb by simply complying with the deal, waiting till that 10-year expiration day, and then moving forward with their program. That, of course, represents a significant threat to the nation of Israel. We do not think that that is something that the United States should entertain. If you want to stand with Israel, if you want to send a message to your government, the government of the United States, and say that we must stand by our ally first instead of pushing forward with a deal with Iran at any cost, I want you to call now, add your name to this petition, Standing with Israel, 877-989-2255, or sign online at aclj.org. We will come back to this issue in just a moment, but quickly, I wanted to get you up to speed on an argument that is taking place at the Supreme Court of the United States today, the case of King v. Burwell. This is the case that takes a look at the subsidies for the state exchanges in Obamacare. Of course, the law said that subsidies would be available for exchanges that were established by the states. Well, folks, 37 states chose not to set up exchanges, and the citizens of those states are now getting subsidies through the federal exchange, something that the law did not permit, did not authorize. That is at the center of the case that is being heard today at the Supreme Court of the United States. Jay was on Fox News this morning on America's Newsroom with Martha McCollum and Bill Hemmer talking about this case, talking about what questions would determine the outcome of this case, and then what might happen in the aftermath. I wanted you to hear that interview to get up to speed on this very important case. Again, this is Jay on Fox News on America's Newsroom from this morning.
Obamacare facing a critical test as the highest court in the land here's the latest challenge to the Affordable Care Act. It could mean that millions might lose their health care coverage. Welcome, everybody. Brand new hour starts now in America's Newsroom. I'm Martha McCallum.
And I'm Bill Hemmer. Good morning. The Affordable Care Act back before the nation's highest court. Oral arguments begin right now on President Obama's signature health care law. And it all boils down to four words in this law. Providing tax credits for health insurance purchased through an exchange. Quote, an exchange that is established by the state. That is how it is written.
Whoops. Jay Sekulow, the chief counsel of the American Center for Law and Justice, joins us now. Jay, you know, it's really remarkable when you think about the fact that this bill, thousands of pages long, not read by most of the members of Congress on Capitol Hill. So then you've got a lawyer in Greenville, South Carolina, who's reading through the law and says, So this says that you have to be part of an exchange that was, quote, established by a state. What if your state doesn't have one? Do you still get the subsidy? And therein lies the rub, right?
Yeah, and the answer, if you just look at the law, is if you don't have a state exchange, you do not. You know, it was Nancy Pelosi famously said, we've got to pass the law to know what's in it. Well, now they passed the law. Now they know what's in it. And they're trying to rewrite the law, or at least have the agency, the IRS of all people, rewrite the law here to meet their own standard. The fact of the matter is, this is exactly what the separation of powers was designed to prevent. And that was unelected bureaucrats changing the law, or the president using his agencies to change law. Look, the law's got a, clearly, the law says state exchanges. Jonathan Gruber, the main architect of the legislation, said it was the incentive to get the states to do this in the first place, that you'd be penalized, basically, or your citizens would be penalized if your state did not set up a state exchange. So now they've got this fundamental flaw in their law, and they're trying to get the Supreme Court to say, basically, whoops, it was a mistake. Fix it for us. But that's not the way the Constitution's set up.
Yeah, so if your state essentially opted out, said, no, we're not going to do a state exchange, then you had to go to healthcare.gov, the federally run exchange. And this question says, well, if you went to that federally run exchange because you couldn't get one at the state level, then you actually are not entitled to any subsidy, any money to help you pay for coverage. So all these people signed up for it, obviously, millions of them. And now they're looking at the possibility that it might be moot. They might say, oh, you know what, you can't have that money. And then they're going to say, well, I can't buy that health insurance then. So then are they going to get fined because they don't have health insurance?
Well, I mean, there's talk about legislation that would be introduced by Republicans in the House and Senate so that they're not penalized for the government's own error and for the administration's mistake. So there is some legislative fixes that people are looking at within the House and Senate, literally as we speak. Senator Orrin Hatch has one. Paul Ryan will be the companion side of that in the House of Representatives. But it brings up a more fundamental issue, and this is the significant constitutional issue here. Who gives the president or his agencies the authority to change the law simply because when the law passed, they didn't bother to read it carefully? Well, you know, that's not the way the Constitution works. What it says is the law says this. If there's going to be a fix in the law, you've got to go to the legislative process. So there's Republicans in the House and Senate that are saying they will put a legislative fix on this. But I suspect, Martha, that legislative fix is going to include changes, as it should, within the way the system is operating. Because, frankly, you take these subsidies away and nobody can afford this health care insurance. And you're talking about 15 to upwards of 20% of the U.S. economy. But the president and the administration here made a giant error. And they've gone to, you know, the Supreme Court's going to take a look at this now. And I'm trusting, although I've litigated cases and I filed a case in this, a brief in this case as well, litigated cases at the Supreme Court for three decades. I don't like guessing where they're going to come out. But it would be hard-pressed for me to see the court rewrite the law here.
Okay. And everybody's going to be watching Chief Justice Roberts because there were a lot of questions about how he came down when he had his first crack at the health care bill. We'll see what happens this time. And I know we'll be talking to you again because this decision comes down in June. So we got a few months of this. Thank you very much, Jay. Always good to see you.
Thanks, Martha.
And there is more. If you did get a subsidy from a state exchange, you may have to wait longer for a tax refund. The IRS reportedly holding up payments while they wait for proper documentation from the states to confirm that you got the right subsidy. Too much or too little might affect your refund, so until the IRS gets the correct data, you will have to keep waiting. A lot of people apparently reported the wrong salary, too. That's an issue.
Again, folks, that was Jay on Fox News from this morning. We will keep you posted on that situation. Again, there is legislation in both the House and the Senate aimed at filling the gap should the court strike down these exchanges, as we think they should. Senator Hatch, Senator Sass, Senator Cruz, Congressman Ryan, Congressman Upton, and others, folks, all have plans on the table ready to fill this void, so we will keep you posted. But, folks, as we close the broadcast today, I think the words of Prime Minister Netanyahu are appropriate. No deal is better than a bad deal, and this is a very, very bad deal. We are better off without it. Folks, if you want to stand with Israel, if you want to tell President Obama and the United States government to not make a deal that would threaten the existence of the state of Israel, stand with our ally, our greatest ally in the region, probably in the world. I want you to call now 877-989-2255 or sign online at aclj.org. Again, stand with Israel, the number to call, 877-989-2255.
The Obama administration was sharply critical of Prime Minister Netanyahu's address to Congress this week. This is not the way to treat our longtime ally and partner in fighting terrorism. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice and send a message to the President and Congress. Stand with Israel and stop bullying our most vital ally. Add your name to our petition right now. Call 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.